I know Cheryl's not coming because she's sick, but I wondered if anyone else had taken it. Okay, if not, that's fine. Let's begin with attendance. President Larson. Vice President Batnagar.
Here.
Vice President Brown. Vice President Ripka.
Here.
Vice President Bourgeois.
Present.
Governor Flamin.
Here.
Let me open up this.
This is delicious.
Yo, Councilor Lynn. Councilor Cobus. Councilor Anderson.
Here.
Councilor Riggs.
Here.
Councilor Moale.
Here.
Councilor Hosseini from the live stream. Councilor Bilak.
Here.
Councilor Cunard.
Here.
Councilor Lee.
Here.
Councilor Hussein. Councilor Statt.
Here.
Councilor Ferris.
Here.
Councilor Thibodeau is in the live stream. Councilor Ansari is also in the live stream. Councilor Yao.
Here.
Councilor Rosalind.
Here.
Councilor Bose.
Here.
Councilor Abwan.
Here.
Councilor Chung. Councilor Ahmad.
Here.
Councilor Sunday. Councilor Nguyen. Councilor Palmer.
Present.
Councilor Azuki is on live stream. Councilor Hadoosh.
Yep.
Councilor Kim. Councilor Kim.
Oh, here.
Councilor DePinto. Councilor Eggerwall is on the live stream. Councilor Risby is on the live stream. Councilor Bruce. Councilor Belcourt.
Here.
I am here as its general manager. I'd like to begin by reminding you all the oath you have taken. We'd like to respectfully acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located in Treaty 6 territory. We are grateful to be of Cree, Dene, Salto, Métis, Blackfoot, Lakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papoose Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. All right, we don't have slides today. I'll speak more of that in a minute. Our traditional knowledge keeper, Sharon McCocus, is sick, so she was unable to bring that, as well as we will not be doing the talking circle today, as was previously mentioned, because she's sick, not here to facilitate it. So we will postpone that late till a later meeting. However, I will be special ordering...
my poem?
I'll give you a chance at the end to do that if you have time. The motions and presentations from the lay editions other than the talking circle onto the main agenda. All right, our next meeting of Students' Council will take place Tuesday, December 11th, 2018, 6 p.m. back here. All right. I think nothing else, I don't think, before we get started. Yes.
If this is the second last meeting of the term, would you happen to have any of the blank scholarship forms?
I believe we have two more. I think we have two more meetings. 11th and then, I might be wrong. Let me take a look.
It would be Christmas Day.
Okay, it was probably the second last. No, I do not. I will do similar to last time. I'll email it out for everyone. Then we'll do the similar process to last time. Thank you for reminding me. All right, so we begin with the items from our late editions. Our first presentation for this evening is the ESS FAMP presentation. Batnagar moves to allow the ESS FAMP presentation. That's a separate one. Is there an abstract for that?
I did submit one with the original motion.
Oh, I see. It was put on the late editions as well as the order papers for some reason. Here it is here. Presentation titled FAP Proposal. Engineering Student Society is pursuing a FAP renewal. Those of you who don't know, FAP is a Faculty Association mandatory fee. They are wanting to be on the ballot in the upcoming year, and this presentation will outline the information needed in bylaw 8200. That is moved by Vice President Batnagar. Is there a second for that motion? Well, we'll give it to Council of Boats this time. Any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none, Vice President Batnagar and the members of the Engineering Student Association, you may come up and deliver your presentation.
I'm not
going to
come up.
Just to meet them? Okay. Did you email me the
presentation? I've blocked on the late ads.
On the late ads? Okay.
I'll pull it up on here.
Wherever you feel comfortable going.
Okay.
So can everyone hear me all right from this position without a microphone?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know how to use microphones.
But thank you for inviting us here today to present our FAP. It is something that we've been working on this year since the summer, and then also last year if you happen to be a student council or engineering student. We've taken a lot of things that we've learned from last year's presentation and proposal and tried to refine a more beneficial value both for our students and both for our community. So in terms of our background, so obviously, as you would know, FAP is paid by every undergraduate engineering student. It is currently $7 per semester. That has been in effect for the last 3 years. It is ending at the end of this year. It is an opt-out fee for all students. They can opt out based on on need or if they do not agree with the philosophy behind it. All of the FAP funding goes to a lot of student initiatives within our faculty, from events that the ESS hosts, from our departmental associations, to other venues and opportunities for engineering students. Last year, a proposal was submitted for $20 per student per semester, and it had failed in the single-digit percentages. In terms of context, from the next page, almost all faculties at the U of A have a version of FAP. It's important to allow faculty associations to be able to support the clubs that are there and the services that are provided. It also keeps us as a school competitive when students are considering where they should go for an engineering degree or any other degrees. So comparatively, the U of A is one of the cheapest FAPs for all of their students. There are a wide range of numbers from somewhere close to $40 to $100 per student per semester to groups such as 20. Next slide, please. In terms of our benefits for increasing FAP, obviously it's important for us to improve the experiences of our engineering undergraduate students. This has always been the focus of our society, and this is always one of the goals. How that happens is oftentimes through events and initiatives, and then through a lot of funding for students to go to conferences, go to competitions, go on to enrich their undergraduate experience in ways that we can't necessarily predict or necessarily provide. Another aspect of this is it is important in order for us to remain a visible member of the engineering societies across Canada and all the various other engineering conferences and competitions across the world. It keeps our school competitive and it keeps us in the eye of industry partners and other schools as well. Next slide, please. So comparatively, fans across campus from this last year, we're a little bit less than organizations of our size, we're a little bit less than BSA, which is at $10 per student per semester. We're a little bit more than sciences, which is $5 per student per semester. In terms of our current model, this is the full breakdown of how it looks currently. I will go into further detail of the various spending portions of it. It is available on our website. Unfortunately, the website has taken a nose clip and hit the iceberg with the Titanic. It's not up, but that's okay. Next slide, please. In terms of scope, our previous staff, 3 years, 2016, 17, 18, 18, 19. Our previous proposal was for a 2-year $20 per student grant, and our current proposal is for another 2 years, so 2019, 2020, and then 2020, 2021. The fee that we are proposing is $10 per student per semester. It's a good balance from our finances to give the ESS the ability to grow and have all the discipline clubs and the initiatives we support. But at the same time, it is, not overreaching in terms of our capacity. This is an amount of money that can substantially improve what we can do, but it isn't necessarily asking for money for money's sake. Next slide, please. So, I like pie charts, apparently a lot of people don't. There will be more detailed models of the funding going through, so I just wanted to let you see it. Essentially, the gist of it is there's been a broad range of increases for the various services. One has been removed and one has been added. If you could go to the next slide, we can go over some of the additions. So this is a relatively new idea for us as a student society, in that we wanted more ability and avenues for engineering students to contribute to their own undergraduate experience. Oftentimes, if you have great ideas, if you want to see some change within your quality of life or your day-to-day activities, you needed to know, quote unquote, the right people, or you needed to be a part of whatever organizations that might access these funds. And so one of the goals of something like a public good fund was to provide more ways and avenues for great ideas to really become fleshed out, to become supported, to become funded. Because oftentimes the ESS has just been doing this because of other informal relationships we've had from any of the applicants or the proposees. And so groups that come from this, that come to mind, is our diversity and engineering club, our sustainability division, and there's obviously lots more that we don't even know about and we haven't even spoken about. Next slide, please. In terms of how we calculated the values that you will see on the next page, we took this year's enrollment numbers, 4,537 undergraduate engineering students, and we multiplied by our current and our proposed values. Each departmental association gets a breakdown from proportionally based on the population that we further on, and some of the calculations we have for our first year group is utilized for their first year retreat. There are, I believe, 12 independent students that they do not fall under any specific department. They are not in terms of their qualifying year or their first year, but they pay SU fees, and so those fees just get bumped into the ESS's general budget. Next slide, please. In terms of breakdown for the changes, there are increases across the board, with one difference being the merchandise allocation that we had within the previous staff. What this was used for was the first year bandanas. If you've ever seen the engineering bandanas, that funding was set aside so that every single first year could have a bandana to show our spirit on campus and across Canada. But we do not believe that it is reasonable to set a monetary value that is so inflexible with how you're spending things. And we thought it was much more reasonable to be to really gauge how much bandanas would cost per year instead of setting aside a bulk sum that may or may not be utilized properly or efficiently. Next slide, please. In terms of our current spending or funding, this is the full breakdown per semester per year. So you're looking at roughly around $32,000 per semester and $64,000 per year in terms of all the various categories. At any point, if anyone has questions about any of our categories, please let me know. They're sometimes maybe a little bit confusing, and some of the wording in our policy has to change to better reflect what the spending is going towards. For our next slide, we talk about our proposed values, the differences that I've shown. It's roughly going to be around $15,000 per semester of difference, of increase from our current model. And you can see the full breakdown of that. Next slide. I really like math, really like numbers. This is the differences in terms of monetary values, if you did care about what the changes might be. And essentially, it shows the breakdown of how we're spending things. To give a bit of like an outside context, we are asking for roughly an increase of $30,000. Last year was asking for roughly an increase of $100,000. So pretty significant difference. Pretty significant difference. Next slide as well. So this is a breakdown for all of our discipline clubs. We've grouped them by student from our enrollment numbers, and then this is the amount that they receive from our distribution per semester per year, which is that $1.40 fee in our proposed. In terms of funds shared, that just shows the breakdown of our faculty into the various departmental associations. Next slide, please. In terms of timelines, from this year, we've spoken at a few different events for our BAMF, specifically the AGM was October 12th. I forgot to add the survey, which was sent out October 21st and closed on staff Sunday. And in terms of town halls, I didn't have the dates, but they were October 23rd, 26th, 31st, November 21st. So four town halls in order to better engage students about why we're proposing this, or what values it have, or how long it should be run for. We've spoken to our dean and our faculty, and they have given us a letter of support. We've spoken to our board of directors, which is the organization that governs ESS and runs all of our events and holds us accountable. They've also provided a letter of support. And now we'll be presenting to SU. Yeah, one more thing to check off the list for this presentation. And next slide, please. Yeah, so in terms of current support, consultations were made with the various groups of faculty, so the Office of the Dean, Office of the Dean of Engineering, the ESS Executive Team, and our Board of Directors. So the membership of our Board of Directors is that there is proportional voting from all of our discipline club presidents, and it is one vote for every 200 students, minimum of one vote, and as well as one vote for all of our students sitting senior executive members. So going forward for the next winter semester, a lot more consultations and sessions will be had just talking about what this means for students should this pass. It is important either way, whether council decides to approve this or not, that students are aware of where the money that they are spending on tuition and fees is going. And we wanted to talk about both our services that we provide and how we can grow those and what people would like to see from us. Next slide. And so yeah, if anyone has any questions, please let me know.
All right, you still have 18 minutes to do question and answer. If you'd like, I can moderate the questions for you.
Please, thank you. Yeah.
All right, we will begin with. Governor Flan.
Hey, Dan. Thank you for coming. Now, I was going through all the numbers on the slides and everything, and of which there are a lot of them, but they are all expenses. I couldn't find anything in there, unless I missed it, about any kind of revenues or any surpluses or deficits over the last few years, and sent no insights down, so I couldn't go back and check. How has that trended over the last few years, and has there been any thought to trying to increase current revenues in other ways or pursue other revenue streams as opposed to asking for an increase in FAMPs first? Because essentially a FAMP is a tax on students, mm-hmm. and I think taxes should come as a last resort, not the first thing to pursue.
Okay, yeah, so you're right. I did not include anything about our revenues within this presentation, but to give council a bit of indication of where we stand, one third of our revenue, roughly, is from FAMP. Two thirds is from external funding and fundraising. A major proportion of that comes from our career fair that we host every January. Other things come from sponsorship through just our external outreach and sponsorship and various grants that we do apply for. So you're right, in terms of FAMP being a tax, and we are justifying this because we have seen pretty significantly the impact of the oil prices in terms of all of our funding and sponsorship. And Looking back on our records, it was very blatant that the moment that oil dropped, any interest in sponsoring us kind of just like took a huge nosedive in terms of just outside spending. So the growth of the society, while not necessarily requires FAF, but if we want to improve on any of our services, expand in other areas, we are very hard pressed in terms of funding to without FAF is the best way to put it. Does that sort of address your question?
Kind of, maybe just a follow-up then. Because a lot of the non-FAMP revenue sources are, I guess, economy-driven and in a bad economy, would it be maybe more prudent to curtail expenses as opposed to expanding them?
We're pretty consistently within our spending for the last, I think, 5 years in the green, in the black. In terms of curtailing expenses, it's a fine balance. There are some things that we have been cutting back on this year and in the last 4 years since the oil prices have changed. But at the same time, I do believe that if expenditures really do, if we're forced to minimize expenditures much more, we lose off a lot of opportunities for things like students going to conferences and us subsidizing that. A lot of the events that we provide will be much smaller in nature. A lot of the services will have a monetary value in mind every single time. And while it is important for us as a society, and we do have the right balance to keep us in check for that, it hurts the overall ability for us to address our students' needs. Sometimes you need to make losses for services and for events, but we more than often than not worry about our expenses as much as you do.
Okay, one more thing. It seems like the biggest increases are going to be for the discipline clubs, student group fund, and student activities fund.
Yes.
So for the discipline clubs and student group fund, student groups, did they approach the ESS and say, hey, look, we need more money? So it's like a chicken or egg argument. Did they come and say, we need more money? Or are you trying to get more money first and hoping they approach you for it afterwards?
So to give you an understanding of why we, so yes, they did approach us and ask for more money, both this year and last year. In terms of the amount of groups that do get funding, in the last year, 9 different groups within the Faculty of Engineering have started. Things from RoboGals to STAR to Sphere and to a lot of big project-based clubs, which have large expenditures. The faculty, contextually, if you remember last year's proposal, one of the big aspects of it was the project group fund. And to give a rough sum of the amount of money that our engineering project groups, roughly 10 of them, require in a year, the budgets, I think, come close to $1 million. For any group that wants to become another project group, they want to compete in competitions within the United States or Canada, when they're talking about building cars, working on medical prostheses, building rockets, those are supported both by us and by the faculty. And so, oftentimes I get the comment that $10 is not even enough if we want to talk about the full scope of funding groups and projects. If that addresses the question.
Okay, Councilor Kim.
Thank you so much for your presentation, Agent. I really liked how you had a chart and expected to see a difference for it was easily laid out for me to see. I just have a quick question regarding engineering student activities fund, because it's one of the big expansion, and I was wondering what specifically is it, and then how many students are planning to benefit? I'm not sure if this for specific group of project students who are doing, and how much support are they trying to expect to get? Is there a range of dollar amount that you are expecting to give out?
Right. I guess I will go through the breakdown of the various acronymed funds for us, because it is a little complicated. So the Engineering Student Activities Fund, as you said, was specifically for individual students to apply for competitions and case comps. Good examples of this are any of the Major League Hacking hackathons that are hosted across the globe in which we send students to. So things like, I believe last weekend they were in, Helsinki, and Boston I think is upcoming, and there's another couple of other groups. The other events like that. So it's not necessarily for any group to apply for, it is to subsidize the travel costs and the conference fees of an individual. More often than not, this has been used for hackathons specifically. a lot of the software and hardware hackathons. We're talking about conferences like, I don't know the acronym, in terms of corrosion engineering. We talk about the groups who are wanting to go to conferences like the latent engineering groups. To separate that from the group fund is that if a group wants to send multiple delegates to a conference or event, they cannot access the individual fund. They can access they can apply for a lump sum to travel to any of the conferences. So the ones that have come up is Engineers Without Borders, their national conference in January, the Bladesmithing Club, in which they have a conference in San Antonio, Texas this upcoming year, and then oftentimes competitions for all of our project groups. So when EcoCar goes to the United States for the tournaments, when Formula, I don't usually know what the players are, but those groups. In terms of usage and utilization, there is a cap for the Engineering Students Activities Fund in which we will match $500 domestically, $800 internationally for both travel and conference fees. And for the groups fund, it is more of a case-by-case basis. It depends on the needs of the group, their own funding, and the events, and how they can contribute to how they can contribute to our community once they return. In terms of usage and utilization from the group fund and activities fund, this is something that is often utilized for students who are interested in going to one-off events. Most famously, a student was interested in a hackathon last year, which was in the Bay Area, and we helped subsidize their travel. We're talking about space conferences within Ottawa, talking to the Canadian Space Agency. So more aligned events like that. But sorry.
Okay. Then my follow-up question is: if you're funding about $500 to $800 for, like, let's say, student TV fund, and it's a per semester, your budget is about like $4,500. It's about like 5 to 6 students per semester that you're sending out.
I believe so. I'm just trying to think the numbers through my head. We usually get applications roughly around 5 to 10 applications per semester for the student fund. The group fund is more of the costs are up front because they're planning for their events throughout the year.
Thank you.
Councillor Hussain.
I also like the presentation per se, but one thing that I actually didn't see is the income statement, which details that you actually think came out of a necessity rather than you trying to expand the faculty fund. It doesn't align, it says for the previous 3 years, but it doesn't detail whether you ran out of deficit or what. It doesn't detail the expenses that you incurred to say that maybe you've done this out of necessity because you've been incurring deficits every year. And the other thing was you highlighted mostly hackathons, and what's the overall faculty of engineering support to you? Because I believe our faculty is the department usually has a hand in it. And my biggest question was, yes, Alan, because what you highlight here is what you have now and what we have after you receive the fund. But you haven't actually shown us where this need is coming from, whether it's through student demand, because it's good that faculty has to be sponsored by a lot of money because it gives you flexibility, but it doesn't show where the need is coming from.
Okay, to answer the small question first. For the most part, our departments play a little hand in terms of sponsoring individual students. They will work with some groups, but overall, the funding goes from us talking to the faculty as a whole, and oftentimes, more than specific departments. Oftentimes, if a student wants to go to a conference from a departmental perspective, they will be more likely working with a professor who wants to support them or fund them. In terms of addressing needs of students and needs of services, you're right, I did not include this in the proposal, and that is my fault, my apologies. I'm not sure how to explain the needs of our students that we haven't presented on here without sounding like a little hokey, but one of the big challenges that we've seen within our students is that in the last 4 years, you're going to have to take my word on this, unfortunately, the increase in demand of
of students getting engaged with our community has grown a significant amount. We're seeing more people who are interested in conferences. We're seeing more people who want to supplement their learning outside of just the traditional co-op and learning experiences. So you're right, we could have detailed it a little bit better in terms of need and necessity from our side.
Sorry to bother you. My question wasn't, it didn't come from that, but because I talked, say, 2 weeks ago, I'm not going to mention the pastor, but I talked to him. He was saying that actually most of you guys run a surplus. So, and I'm surprised that today you're presenting on an increment, which is like, if you aren't running on a deficit, which is like you actually heavily need to increase the faculty fund, then I don't actually see the need for you actually to present this, because if you're running on a surplus, meaning that you don't actually spend, you spend less, and you have more money, then why are you actually increasing this fund? So, my assumption is these are not facts. It may be in as much as it's good to actually increase the fund because it gives you flexibility, but I think it should be driven from the need, because you could have said, I say, from 2016, this is what the revenue we receive, this is what we spend, and we spend more than we receive, and hence we need actually more, because I'm actually talking from the numbers.
Point of order, this is supposed to be a question. We'll debate this at council next meeting.
We'll debate
okay.
whether or not
questions
we have
only.
Next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have a specific question for him, go ahead. But yes.
Okay. So more of the numbers, expenses, detail, and why you actually need it.
Can I give my speakers?
Yeah,
of course. Someone else?
Hello, everyone. I'm not sure whether my mic is on or not. My name is Aline. I'm the VP Finance for the ESS. So I would just like to. For example, give you some statistics maybe from my experience as the VP Finance this year. For example, in terms of the Engineering Student Activity Fund and Engineering Student Group Fund, to give you some context, it's distributed through something called an Undergraduate Funding Committee, which consists of myself as the chair and a few other discipline club presidents who are also board of directors members. And the reason that, for example, like this fund exists and doesn't get like completely spent every year is because we obviously have to manage it in such a way that we're not actually fulfilling the requests that are like given to us, right? So for example, in the last funding committee meeting, which actually took place like a week or two ago, we had approximately, the total sum of requested funds was like $12,000. We were only able to grant, I wanna say $4,000. So that would explain why we're not running at a deficit, because obviously running a society at a deficit would be a little bit irresponsible if we were completely spending all of this money every time, right? That's all I have to say. I have more statistics, but I think it's a little bit irrelevant.
And just like a last bit to add on to that, the ESS is at a size where we think of ourselves as a small business, and so expenditures going into the red negative every single year may be acceptable for some folks, but honestly, like, I think about this as a small business. I phrase things as a small business, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect only to talk about how we can grow our revenue when we're already in the red years and years and years.
Thank you. Vice President Ripka.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I think it's pretty clear that the ESS has done its due diligence in preparing for this FAF increase, and I'm excited to vote in favor of it on December 11th. I was just wondering if you could provide a little bit of information about your financial accountability and transparency processes and the standards that you have currently, just with the increase of $30,000 a year. I think it'd be important for council to know about. Thank you.
In terms of our funding through the Groups Fund, Activities Fund, all of that spending is you have to apply for it, and then you have to submit details of the conference and travel, and then when you return, you must provide both a report of what you learned at the whatever event you attended, as well as a breakdown of the budget of what you spent. I'm just going to go point by point by point. How about that? In terms of conferences and competitions, that bullet is reserved for all of our engagements with the Canadian Federation of Engineering Students and all of their conferences and events. So that is managed by us. But as like a general overview, the board of directors for us approves our budget at the start of every single year.
financial reports are presented on all the spending activities by the ESS on a monthly basis. Meetings are monthly in order to keep financial oversight of both of all of our executives. In terms of, so that covers most of the funding through the ESS, which is the bottom portion of that. In terms of the Student Group Fund, Activities Fund, it'll be in that framework. The Public Good Fund, in terms of its in its proposed policy language, is going to be similar to the Activities Fund, in which that this will be something that people will have, obviously, an avenue to propose anything that they'd like, but curtailed and curated by the ESS and by our board of directors in order to make sure that the funds are being used appropriately and the spending is used appropriately, if that addresses the concerns.
Thank you. We're almost out of time with this presentation. We still have quite a few people on the speaking list. Is there anyone wishing to extend? We require 2/3 majority to extend by 15 minutes. So have placards up nice and high. All right, any opposed? We'll extend by an additional 15 minutes. All right, we have a question from the live stream from Councillor Sunday. It says, thank you for your presentation. Could you please speak more to opting out of the proposed FAMP? How long is the opt-out period and how accessible is it for students?
So our opt-out, should I just speak into the mic?
Just speak, it takes a
cool. So in terms of our opt-out, there is a form that we ask students to fill when they opt out. They come to our gear store, which is our storefront, and there are copies of the opt-out feeds kept there. There are copies of the opt-out feed on our website, if it was working. And it is a simple 5-minute form. The opt-out period is just for the semester that they are charged FAMP for. And then we just keep track of that on our records through our system with that. If that answers the question.
Thank you.
The
next two. Who is that?
That
is Councilor
Ferris. Thank you for your presentation. I was here last year and I saw it, and I think it's very much well more like laid out and the proposal a lot more reasonable. I did have a quick question though. On the timeline, it said you did a FAMP survey in a FAMP town hall. I was just wondering what the turnout for that was and kind of what the response was.
So that is in the full details of the proposal. I don't know if everyone got the written proposal that I sent out.
Yes,
okay. So the breakdown, the full breakdown isn't there. In terms of town hall engagement, not the greatest. In terms of 4 town halls, we're probably getting, 15 people total. That doesn't include the conversations, obviously, with the Office of the Dean of Engineering, with the Board of Directors, and all the conversations with the ESS. In terms of survey responses, I believe we've gotten 32 was the majority of it. People are appreciative of what we've done, and I believe the results will show that they support an increase of FAMP of $10, and that an overwhelming majority actually prefer having a 2-year limit in which that they have all students have an ability to weigh in on how much they're paying at least once during their degree.
Councilor Hadouche. Still use your buttons. You just won't come over the speakers. Go ahead.
So thanks for being here, Dayton, and thank you to the entire Engineering Student Society for putting together such strong consultation regarding the fee and creating a fee that actually does reflect what engineering students not want right now. As you outlined, students have had a lot of time to sort of engage in the proposal of this fee, and on December 11th, Council will be voting on whether the ESS has the fiduciary accountability to support this fee, not on the semantics of what the fee actually outlines, just to be clear. And so I think that the University of Alberta, being a faculty that, or a university that like really like favors and looks to innovation and research, that the addition of the Public Good Fund is fantastic, and that it gives students a really unique opportunity to, engage in like extracurricular activities or experiential learning opportunities. And so I was just wondering if you could touch on some of the really great groups that would benefit from this in the future, such as like Alberta SAC and DIVI.
So Alberta-Stat is the fun example where like the faculty loves them. So in terms of, to give some context, they're a Cube satellite team that has built a Cube satellite that they have sent out to space. Since the CubeSat went up, the faculty hasn't stopped talking about them, which is kind of fun for me, but also kind of annoying at the same time. In terms of what that means, though, so when we're talking about our project groups, we're talking about a group like EcoPart that develops a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle that competes within the Shell Eco Marathon of the Americas. To give some context to why hydrogen fuel cell vehicles are important, they use, I believe, the record for a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle in terms of its fuel mileage is, I believe, less than a can of Coke significantly less than a can of Coke in terms of energy for 100 kilometers, 100 miles. This is a way for engineering students to get hands-on experiences that benefit when they enter the workforce. So one of the greatest examples of that, specifically talking to EcoCar again, was that a couple of our students within our mechanical teams had the opportunity to apply for Tesla. They straight up cold called them and said, like, I want to work as a co-op student for you. And since that initial person, if you know Marcus Snack, Tesla has been coming to our campus pretty consistently. They offer co-op jobs through our co-op offices, and they've now hired one Marcus, new grad, and a couple of other U of A grads, but that's beside the point. In terms of Alberta-Stat, you've probably seen some of the photos that Callie, our team lead, or Tyler, our previous team lead, have had with Canadian astronauts like Chris Hadfield, and they've presented at both the Canadian Space Agency, they presented at a couple of the European Space Agency meetings and conferences. In terms of diversity in engineering, that is a new, somewhat initiative that was supported and helped funded by the ESS, talking and addressing about the concerns of minorities, either visible or invisible, within our faculty and within our in our profession. If we all know the kind of rumors and the perspectives of engineering being a male, white dominated workforce, especially in Alberta. If you've ever been to any of the sites, you might know that this isn't necessarily always just like a rumor that goes on. But the growth of something like that is hosting speakers talking about how to balance work and life, how to balance having a family and having a career within our field. And that was something that was really, really important and impactful, I think, for our community to speak on. Another great thing is that they represent us in terms of the Conference in Diversity in Engineering, and they are our representative group of the EngineQueers chapter of the U of A in terms of helping boost and support the inclusivity of minority students within a faculty that has been predominantly and traditionally male and white. So there's groups like that have been really cool. I really like the Bladesmithing Club. Man, they just get together, they actually make swords. They don't sharpen them, I don't think, or they won't tell me if they sharpen them. but like, if you ever get the chance to come into ETLC, you know, head down Club's hallway, knock on the materials engineering student's door, ask to see their knives and their axes, and they'll just yell at me because they know it was me who directed them your way. In terms of other groups, two new groups this year, the U of A Biomed team, they've started working on medical prostheses, I believe, just the analysis and the construction of them as a own project. And then the rocketry team, STAR, what's actually really funny is this is their founding year, and so this entire year they've been reading up on rocket science because, you know, in order to build a rocket, you need to understand rocket science. And so this entire year it sounds like they've been taking chapters apart from rocket science textbooks, and a lot of the thermodynamic flight textbooks talking about how rockets are built and constructed, and they've been teaching themselves, and hopefully within the next probably 5 years, seeing a rocket from the U of A. We can talk about SPEAR, which is our Mars rover team, which has built this really cool looking Mars rover prototype in the fashion of many of the others, not including the one that landed a couple of days ago. Engineering is really about having that hands-on experience. It doesn't say anything to our employers if you don't necessarily have any of the hard skills that come from the technical work. And having this sort of funding both addresses some of the concerns that we have regarding our own community. It pushes the envelope in what we think of as engineering with things like unconventional engineering conversations about what the makeup of engineering should look like or will look like, and then also gives opportunities for students to get very hands-on with the stuff that they're learning, or oftentimes leapfrog their own education, because I don't think anyone is expected to understand how a rocket works if they graduate from a mechanical engineering degree, but you bet your ass that a lot of people do within Alberta SAT and within Sphere.
Thanks very much for the presentation. This has been great. I feel very informed. So I was just wondering that to build on Councillor Sunday's question a little bit, since he's in the live stream, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think what he may have been referring to when he said opt-out period is the amount of time that students have to go and hand in the form to opt out at the beginning of the semester before the fee is assessed to them. Great, thank you, yes. So I was first of all wondering what that period is. And then I was also wondering how many students opt out currently, and if you took into account the possibility of more students opting out when you created your budget projections and stuff.
In terms of timeline, we've only really worked with the month following the deadline of fees, so the end of September to the end of October, and then any time within that time period, they would be refunded the $7 it is currently. In terms of numbers of people who have opted out, I think within over the last 3 years, I can't count more than like 10. It's opt-out for us is fairly low, maybe because of a lower cost and maybe because of other reasons. But we are not a society that depends entirely on our FAF. So if next year 100 people decide to opt out, that would, one, suck for the next executive team, but two, you know, the ESS would still keep chugging.
Yeah, thank you so much for your presentation. I think based on this, it's clear that there's a deficit in service currently being able to like be provided by the ESS. So yeah, I'll definitely be voting in favor on December 11th. My question is, what's gonna happen to Gear Week? Are we gonna get like super sick now or what? Like even sicker?
So in context, to update everyone, is Gear Week has been historically a period of time where engineers in our faculty have come together to celebrate engineering, whatever that might mean to them, in whatever ways they might find it joyful. Don't worry, every year since we've been allowed to have Gear Week again, we've built on what is both fiscally responsible and an enjoyable experience. And so this year, more invites will be going out to both council and faculty associations, because it's been 75 years of Gear Week, but engineers have won every single one. So all I'm saying. If you look through some of our photos in the history, we've had a lot of great engagement with other faculties in the past. There is a great photo, I believe from the 70s, of an Aggies team trying to hose down an engineering team in the middle of January. Gear Week is always, we always want to improve what we can do. We always want to let it so that as many people can join or participate in the events as possible. And with or without FAMP, that is always the goal.
Councillor Palmer.
Thanks for your question. I had about three, but I think you've answered a number of them. But my question was more about, firstly, if you spend the entire budget, what happens? And then I think you answered that. But then secondly, my question was, what was the specific feedback? Did you get any negative feedback? And if so, what was it from
right.
feedback that you got? And then my third question was on the diversity topic and if there were scholarships or funding models specifically for diverse communities, like women or other?
To go through a little bit point by point, in terms of any of the values that are not fully spent, so ESAF and ESGF are held in separate accounts. They will continue to grow and build. And then more of the rest of the funding that we don't spend is just rollover for our team. In terms of funding specifically diversity, we are not a society that grants any scholarships. In terms of conferences is obviously the big one. So
sorry, no worries.
In terms of conferences, the question of diversity specifically within engineering
That conference is only 4 years old. The conversation is just beginning, and it is something that we are, I wouldn't say necessarily we're, you know, leading by any means, but at the same time, we are very competitive with other schools in terms of how we've addressed the topic, both from our side and the side of the faculty. There's been talks about hosting that conference within Edmonton at some point. Tyler's laughing because they're trying to ask someone, like, so who would do it if we did it? Not saying we'll do it, but if we did it. And sorry, what was the middle point?
Something about feedback specifically.
Oh, yes, feedback. So in terms of feedback, we mostly got an all or none response with a full breakdown. A lot of people were like, I don't want to pay anything. 2-0 is too much money. But some people, obviously, on the other end of the spectrum, it's $10 is not enough for student services or student clubs. In terms of feedback, it's kind of been a mixed bag. I'm just thinking back through some of the responses I've gone through. A lot of them can comment on the services that we utilize. A lot of them, and they're seeing the benefit and they understand why we want to increase it. But also a lot of students, due to the nature of our degrees and our scheduling, oftentimes feel like they are underutilizing this fund because they do not feel like they have the time to access it. And so that is where a lot of the frustration comes from in terms of funding in general for our society. But that's not a, like, you should just keep it at a value, it's just go to zero.
But like every student gets a bandana, and then
yes.
Is that sort of all they see other than students attending conferences and traveling and such?
In terms of from where our BAMF is spent,
mm-hmm.
Most predominantly they see it through the services and the events. So to comment on some of those, one of the great ones that we've had,
I remember seeing your charts.
Oh, yeah. To talk about some of the great ones in terms of our speaker series, we've consistently pulled in industry speakers to talk about various specific attributes within engineering, specific attributes within engineering education, and oftentimes interesting topics like how do you get a job that isn't engineering? How to avoid engineering completely. In terms of services and other events, we run our store, which is an ETLC. We provide a couple of stationary items and office items, most famously being our engineering pads. A lot of assignments within the civil stream and the chemical stream require how much we've done there. And we offer engineering paper at a cheaper price than the bookstore, which is the only other place to get it, unless you find all of them. I would say I'm very biased, obviously, but I would say we're fairly visible within our community. The sign is not small in front of our store, but oftentimes, you know, you always bump into students who, this is a real fun comment, was that the survey was sent out through our engineering newsletter, EngLink, to cover all the various big topic items. Someone had read that newsletter, decided to go through the presentation, and said that the ESS doesn't do shit. Quotes.
Mm-hmm.
It's always an interesting thing for me, but I would say most students understand where we're coming from. They see they utilize our events. Though some students do believe that the stuff that we do is done by our faculty, which is an interesting problem in and of itself. If that better addresses that second point.
We've run out of time for our extension. Unless there's a motion to suspend standing orders, we will close it there. There is still 8 people on the speaking list. If any of those people would like to motion to suspend standing orders. Yes.
Point of information. We have like a decently long agenda tonight with some time-sensitive items, so I think that think about whether your question can be addressed over those emails, because I'm sure Dayton would take any feedback via there. But do you want to?
Yeah, if it's just feedback or you're just going to say support, send it via email would probably be better. Actually, if you have a legitimate question to ask, and you would like to motion to suspend standing orders, I open the floor to any motions now.
Point of information.
Yes.
There is like a 58-page document attached to the editions that outlines detailed things about.
It's only 56. Sorry.
56, sorry. So please read through that before you ask your question. So I would Dayton will be here at the next council meeting to answer any questions you may have. So
I did break Josh's record. He was 64.
Oh
my gosh. Any motions from the floor? Okay, seeing none, we will go on. Thank you very much for your presentation.
that. We'll turn to our order papers. Our presentation from the order papers, we have, I believe, one more. Presentation titles, Proposed Changes to Student Group Oversight, presented by President Bourgeois and Rebecca Taylor from the Office of Discover Governance. This presentation will explain some proposed changes the SU staff and executive will be sending the Students' Council for consideration. Bourgeois moves to allow the proposed changes to student group oversight presentation. Is there a second for that motion? Dr. Belak, thank you. Any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none. Rebecca and Andre, you guys can have the floor. Is your presentation in here, or did you email it to me?
I'm not sure. Should I share with you right now?
I thought they got sent with the motion. No. Yes, it is last night. Cool. Should we sit here?
Some issues with student group oversight. It kind of started as suggestions to how the university could be better and gradually morphed into how we could actually take over some of that process ourselves. So that's what this presentation is about today. So to give you a bit of a history, if you want to go to the next one, how things are done now or have been done in the past. The SU student group oversight and the dean of students and university group oversight have been kind of meshed together. People, when they apply for a student group status, have to choose either, they have to apply with the university and then they can choose to be affiliated with the SU or the GSA. A lot of them have no idea what that means. SGS handles a lot of the administration, but the dean of students has pretty much all of the decision-making power, so if they decide that a student group is really risky, they can kind of decide to just not accept them, and SGS can't really say very much about it, and may not actually have any information on it. And as of right now, they have to be recognized by the Dean of Students in order to be a Students Union group. So we've had some issues with this system in the past. Things like the definition of hazing being really, really vague and being used to kind of silence student groups and student representative associations. Really inconsistent timelines and processes, so for some groups, they'll get back to them about an event approval right away and everything's good to go, you know, months in advance, and for other ones, the student group doesn't hear back until the day before their event, which is really not ideal considering they're not really allowed to advertise their event before they're officially approved. There's been a lot of poor communication, so for example, the U of A Firearms Club wanted to get started up, and they were left in limbo for more than a year, I think, with absolutely no information, so they kept saying, like, what's wrong with our student group, how can we approve so that we actually get approved by the Dean of Students, and we couldn't really tell them anything, students wasn't communicating. And there have been a lot of really unfair disciplinary decisions as well, so I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the ESS Gear Week. That was essentially canceled because a couple of students ran through a building with a blow-up doll and some professors didn't like it. There's the old Phys Ed and Rec Association was forced to change their constitution regarding their election process because some students had been caught drinking in their office. The punishment didn't really fit the crime in any way. So there have been a lot of issues like that. I won't get into the election thing because it might get Mark kind of fired up. But that was a whole debacle as well.
So, proposed structure. Something new that we think will probably probably help alleviate some of these concerns. First is to separate the Students Union from the Dean of Students and make it so that we can have greater oversight over the way that student groups are disciplined, so that we can approve event registration and event recognition in our own spaces, in our own venues. So we have venues such as RAT, Dewey's, Dinwiddie Lounge, the Meyer Horowitz Theater. These are spaces that we own, we operate, we staff, we have security for them, we have bar service for them, we have all of the bits and pieces that contribute to risk in events, and we have them managed and under control so that we can offer services like that to external groups, for example. So if a dance company comes and they want to, as they do, and they want to throw an event, say, in Dewey's or RAT, they can just do it and book it with us. And we want that same privilege to be allowed for student groups without them having to prove that two of them have ProServe in RAT so that they can not serve alcohol to the people attending their event, right? It doesn't make sense. So we want to be able to just have a student group come up to us and say, hi, I'd like to do something in RAT, can I? And we can say, is RAT available that day? Yes, then great, give us your deposit and you'll have your great event. But it also comes into things where, like, with discipline and oversight. So if we have an issue where, for example, a student group messes up in Dinwiddie Lounge, like they make a huge mess or something, or something goes wrong with their event, we want to be able to determine how best to proceed in that. So if we go to the next slide, we want to establish a student group committee. So the membership would be two members of Students Council, the VP Student Life, the VP Academic, four students at large, two staff members each from both the university and from Student Group Services. So the Dean of Students would still likely be represented on this committee. They would have a voice at the table. And they would, the mandate of this group would be to determine on, like I said, event registration, event approval, or registration of student groups, event approval, discipline. And then it would also allow us to review our existing student group bylaws, our policies, our procedures. So this is really the biggest change that we're proposing here. This is going to be a standing committee of student council. The highest level of student group oversight will then be handled by students. So students will get to decide what happens to fellow students. Most of this oversight is administrative, right? It's student group services, they come in, they say, okay, is this a legitimate group? People want to play Smash Brothers together? Yeah, sure, we can do that. Student group wants to play Nintendo games, great. Ooh, student group wants to bring assault rifles to campus. Maybe we send that to the student group committee, right? Like the firearms club. We don't have assault rifles in Canada either way. So that way, it'll help groups get their events set up quicker. They'll be able to advertise them quicker and actually get posters put up and stuff like that instead of waiting. And then in cases where it's gray or ambiguous, then it will funnel up to the student group committee. So if we go to the next page. I'll just keep going. So like I said, most of this whole like registration and recognition process is highly automated and administrated. Groups come in, they apply, we check if they make sure that they've filled in all of the right information, and then SGS will, you know, get in touch with that group if they have any issues with their applications, work out those details with them. And they're gonna continue, like Student Group Services isn't just gonna say, okay, goodbye Dean of Students, we're never working with you again. They're just gonna keep having those relationships and keep working together, and the group will still register with DOS, and they could register with the Students Union, and if they're a grad student, sure. If, for example, Dean of Students says, no, we don't wanna be affiliated with that group, Student Group Services says, okay, let's bring that to the Student Group Committee. Maybe we do want to be involved with that group. Maybe the students at the University of Alberta do think that's a good idea, and in which case, we can legitimize them, and then they can come to our spaces, and they can have an event in the lower level of sub, or on the second floor of sub. Did you miss anything? No. So if we go to the next one, event approval. So I've kind of already gone over this again, but basically one of the sticking points here is that the Students' Union has insurance and we have venues and we will not be like at risk by doing this really. If something, like barring, I mean, the entire Students' Union building collapses and everyone dies, like then our insurance would not cover that because that's a huge amount of money. But like generally speaking, things like that don't happen in Dinwiddie Lounge when a student group wants to have like a Diwali event, right? Like that's not how this works. So if DOS doesn't want to like approve an event or they're taking a really long time to approve the event, at least the student group gets to continue pursuing their initiatives and their goals. I think we and there'll be if you once you see the bylaw, it's all laid out. So yeah, here's appeals. So if, say, student group, they get upset with the way that student group services is handling things, they can come and say, no, I want to appeal to the student group committee. Student group committee says, nope, we actually agree with student group services, sorry, you're out of luck. That student group can then appeal to DAI board, and then DAI board can make a ruling based on that, so it goes through governance, and it's nice and like just. And yeah, as I already mentioned, student group services can also say, hey, committee, make a decision. We don't want to, or this is too out of our scope. So if we look at discipline, this is just the discipline process that we have laid out. The student group code as it exists protects groups from unfair disciplinary action. And if a group is thought to have broken bylaw, they will get then an investigation carried out by staff of student group services and other folks who may be involved. You know, if it's at RAT, I imagine the RAT staff will participate in that investigation, liaison with student group services. What's the history? What are the facts? Bring it to the student group committee. Student group committee, all of us who are on it, make its choice. Anything, again, you can appeal to the DAI board and strict timelines as to how long that will happen because we don't want a group, like we said, being left in limbo where they're like, okay, I appealed this, shout it off a cliff and nothing's happening. What's so it'll be like, you will receive a response by X date. Consultation, we did it. We talked to the 2718 bylaw chair. We talked to the 2718 Council of Faculty Associations. We've consulted with real life members of DAI board and student group executives. Most of the feedback we received was incorporated into the bylaw. And if you look at the information item, it is long and very detailed and almost looks like Rebecca spent 3 years putting it together to make sure that it was wrought iron solid. You can read all about it. So let's talk about the next steps. If we decide that this is a good idea and if we think that this is good for student groups, then we can send these first and second principles through bylaw, through council, pass it, and if it's deemed by council or by bylaw that we have not yet done our due diligence, we can go back and continue doing consultation, continue collecting and making it more of a robust student-friendly plan. But otherwise, we hope to have it ready to go for May. If everything checks out, y'all agree that it's a good idea, bylaw agrees it's a good idea, next year you'll have a student group committee, and we think it would be really great. So, are there any questions?
We have 17 minutes left. Would you like to moderate?
Sure. Moderate questions?
Sure, yeah. Council Kim.
Thank you so much for the presentation, Rebecca and Andre. I think I'm big support of this idea. Especially like Rebecca quickly mentioned about LHSA, but when I was the president of Hong Kong Association, there was a lot of grief when it came to when we're advocating and we have a space that's given we don't even pay rent, but given by university to use for the residences. And when we're dealing with advocates that are like more controversial, it becomes more difficult because they can totally revoke our like status and if you're not recognized in those situations. And I have that was one of the concerns that I was thinking. I thought this one goes through really good process as well as the reasoning behind it. The only question I have is clarifying
the exact process. So if it is an event that's happening within SU, and if it's like low risk, like let's say everyday drinking rental and things like those events, so it goes straight to SGS and SGS approves it, or it just gets approved right at RAT, or how does that work?
The way it works right now is if, like, SGS would kind of administer the process a little bit, but if, say, they wanted to book RAD, it would go to our conferencing and events department, and they would just kind of handle it from there. The only time that it would really go to a student group committee is if the student group itself is really unhappy, or if the event is, like, really high risk, or really kind of, like, too controversial for SGS to be comfortable just passing it along to the group. Want to speak to that one?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think things may have changed since I last heard about this. So some events we can approve, but the university's policy for groups, of which currently all groups are university groups, as long as they're a university group, the university has a policy that all events need to be approved by the university. This is a source of great consternation and problems for student groups. It's one of the things we're trying to address. We are working on getting the university to just give us carte blanche to manage events in our building. However, if you've ever worked with university, and particularly whenever it has anything to do that could potentially have legal or reputational risk, it literally takes years. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to set up a system, get it running, show them that it works just fine and in many ways is superior, which I really believe it will be. And then our expectation is that they'll go, yeah, why are we spending all this student money, these resources doing this when we have the solution that's working and is student administered over here? So to answer your question, in some small limited cases, you can't just go to RAD as a group. It has to, but that's like a reservation for a table. Above that, I believe they still have to, at this point in time.
So the university thinks that. Whether or not we think that, I think it's going to depend.
So the process, for example, would be the Hub Community Association wants to do an event in RAT, but they have no idea how to do it. Their point of contact right now is likely student group services. So they go to student group services and they say, hey, I want to do an event in RAT. Student group services says, great. Fill out a form in Bearsden and send it up to the Dean of Students' Office. And in the meantime, while that's getting approved and everything, go to conferencing and events and book your event with RAT, and we'll say 1, 2, 3, here's good, send, pay your deposit, go print your posters, go wild, have fun. We'll send an email up to Dean of Students and say, hey, you should have received an email from the Hub Community Association saying that they want to do an event in RAT. We have reviewed the event, both student group services and conferencing and events, and we have determined that it is a blah, 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 really good event. It's going to be great. So many people are going to show up. And by the way, here's our insurance, just to remind you that we're totally covered and you're not going to be held liable if anybody, if anything happens to anybody. Then, ideally, 15 days or less later, the student group will receive an email from Bearsden confirming that their event has been approved and confirming that it's all full steam ahead. Does that make sense?
Yes, but that's, like, my question is, that is the current process, right?
No,
but
that's not the current process. The current process?
The current process, what I know is, like, so it's essentially more or less the same where you go to the Bearsden, fill out the form where the DOS approves the event, and then you go to RAD and say, can I book your event and, like, do those. Isn't it, like, more or less the same? I was wondering whether or not this DOS process will be eliminated if we go straight to SGS and our own SU portion, or this portion always has to be, students have to be like both.
We're trying to simplify it for student groups, but we have not completed the process.
Okay.
This is part of that process, and we're looking at a May 2019 like initiation of all of that, by which we hope to have all that kind of stuff straightened away.
Okay, Governor Flanagan.
Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple of, I guess, clarifying questions for my benefit. Currently, the way it is, student groups can either be recognized by the university and the SU, or by the university and the GSA, right?
That's correct.
So in this instance, and from what I understand, we're not trying to, at least not immediately, wrest control of the approvals and whatnot from DOS. We're just trying to do our own thing, and then the end game is to do that, but just not right now.
Maybe.
Okay. On the off chance that a student group is SU recognized and not university recognized, how would they be allowed to have, say, events in Rad or Dues when they need to be a university recognized group in order to use the university's institutional liquor license?
Okay, so there's a lot of parts to that question. First of all, we are not trying to wrest control from the university and commandeer a like coup of student groups. We just want student groups to be able to do stuff in our place. It's like, hey, can I use your house tomorrow? We're like, yeah, come on in. If they're like, hey, can we use Quad? We're like, well, you better ask the university. That's their house, right? So the second part of that question is just like quickly, real, like you asked, what was the last part again?
So currently student groups have to be recognized.
Yeah, so if the student group is not recognized by the university, but students on the student group committee and VP student might, VP academic, and there's going to be a voice of dean of students at that table, maybe they're the only dissenting voice, right? They say, no, they're not using the university's institutional liquor license, they're using the student's union's liquor license that we have for Dinwiddie Lounge, which is like a class, I forget. Either way, we have a liquor license, the university has a liquor license, yes?
We're under them, but we're moving to be separate.
So yeah, there, we're going to work that all out.
So what happens until we do that?
We've talked to them. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue.
Right. Yeah, I don't either. I'm just trying to think of what is.
Okay, Councilor Staff.
I am so thrilled with the idea, in part because I know in talking to my faculty association, one of their primary complaints slash concern was dealing with SGS and for the process of events. So I think this will be a huge help to them and a lot of other clubs. So I'm massively in favor. My only concern is, or rather question, is just around capacity. So it sounded like you had kind of compared the new committee in somewhat of the same light or respect as a dive board, like kind of a final level of things that work out to go from point to. I just wanted that clarified, and also just making sure that we would have a capacity, let's say in an ideal world, all these different student groups just love our spaces and they just want to keep coming back all the time, which would be great. Do we have the capacity to take on all that additional rental space and everything, especially considering we have third parties that often like to use our space as well? That was sort of a two-part question, if that's all right.
For the first part, the student group committee is sort of a middle ground, so they're the first stop if SGS is unsure about something or if the student group is unhappy, and then Dive Board is kind of the final stop. For the capacity question, as far as I know, we do have the capacity right now. We're not booking out our spaces at full capacity, and from what I understand, I think our conferencing and events is trying to actually expand our capacity for our student groups and student-led activities. In 5 years, who knows? But I don't know, Mark, if you want to speak to that at all?
We've massively improved our conferencing and events capacity. Still, it's still an issue that we have to keep an eye on, but we think it's worth it.
Also, think in a perfect world, we would have those venues booked every single day, and that's also a source of revenue generation, right? And then you grow capacity that way too, even more, and then you have the most like slick conferencing events with less external people, even, right? More students.
I want to make a correction so everyone understands. We do not currently do event approvals, so when you have a problem with getting your event approved, it's not SGS's fault. One of the reasons we want to do this is because we're getting blamed for what happens on the fourth floor, fifth floor.
Yeah, SGS administers, and then it goes into the black hole of the dean of students, and it may or may not come back out. So that's kind of the process right now.
Is there any other questions from the floor? We've still got another 6 minutes. Any other questions from the floor?
exactly. So for that, is that like how flexible is that? Like how, like, is that like finalized? Like when will that be finalized? I'm just like curious because like for the four students at large, like with like the student groups that we have on campus, we have so many and it's like so diverse. I'm just like wondering if like you think that those four students will suffice to like incorporate all of that. I just feel like there's a lot of room for like inclusivity and like understanding. There's a lot of cultural groups and just like so much diversity.
I think the answer to that question is that this is kind of what we've come up with based on what we think is reasonable, but at the end of the day, it's council's bylaws, council's standing orders for this committee. If you think that there's like a better structure or a better number, it's totally up to you to like change that however you want. We've kind of written up a first and second principles and standing orders just as a base to get you started, but after we hand it to you, it's totally yours to do what you want
with. If you have any suggestions, please make them. I will say though, it's 12 members, so specific suggestions are very welcome. Mm-hmm. It's 12 members and it's as much an operational and working committee as anything else. So when you start to, like, we have a 16 or 20 member committee trying to deal with a thorny disciplinary issue, it's going to be a zoo. You might as well bring it to council. So we wanted to make sure that it had broad representation, which is why there's four student larges, university, SGS, the execs, and the counselors, because that represents the connection to council and legitimacy. Making it a lot bigger, I would be afraid would be to make it a very unworkable committee for the kind of work it has to do.
This is already quite large compared to.
And I wasn't saying like oh, we should have like 10 more people or something for like the students at large, but I just mean like is it a consideration or like has that been thought about? Like what if all of those people, which is very likely with like the governance and stuff, all of those people end up being white males? Like, I mean, that's common, right? I mean, like, not saying that it's gonna happen, but what if that does happen and then there's an issue with the student group and it's say like a cultural issue or there's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's like, I'm just like curious if there's if as you considered like a problem like that arises or just like accounting.
How do we appoint students at large for this committee?
It's like, I think, I don't remember exactly. It's kind of an application process from what I remember. You kind of put out to student groups and students at large, like we're looking for members of this committee, and then, you know, the kind of main members get to decide, or council gets to decide who.
We go to NOMCOM.
Yeah, NOMCOM.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They can add some stuff in standing orders indicating that there's a need for diverse, to ensure that it's a diverse representation. I mean, certainly all the staff think it should be. So like that it has come up in the meeting. So
yeah. I don't think it's something that's specifically legislated for right now in the standing orders or anything, but it's definitely something that you can look at adding, or if you want us to try to add it before we pass it along to the council, we can do that as well.
Because like, I saw a point about discrimination and like all that, and I think that that's, it's just sometimes it's a gray area, right? Like, and then we have wall biases, and it's just,
yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Councilor Morley.
I'm wondering if there's currently any difference in the disciplinary process between SRAs and other student groups, and would this change affect any of that?
Yes. Right now, discipline for student representative associations is kind of split between the dean of students and the SU. The SU has the ability to do any kind of disciplinary action regarding the advocacy side of an SRA, and the dean of students has power to discipline the more kind of student group like events type side.
For example, the student group speaks on behalf, or if an SRA speaks on behalf of the student union because they're like an arm of the student union, and we're like, oh, that's actually definitely not the opinion of the student union, we can distance ourselves and be like, those views are not those that are expressed by the student union, ask them to withdraw. But if they throw a crazy party with no event approval, then they can get shut down by the university.
The process right now on the student union side is there's kind of a like investigation and probationary system through bylaw 8100 that falls under the purview of the vice president academic. And in the new system we're proposing, all of that would be taken out of
is really, it's a much more kind of democratic way to do it than what we do right now. What we do right now is we kind of can just decide to be recognized as an association, and they can appeal it to Dye Board if they feel that the bylaw wasn't upheld, but the bylaw is very broad, so it's not easy to do.
Thanks. Okay, we've run out of time, and we're coming close to recess time. There's still two people on the speaking list. Is there anyone we wish to extend, or do you guys want to end here? Anyone wishing to extend? That's nothing, so that extension fails. Thank you very much for your presence.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. We'll end there a little bit early before recess, and then we'll go into reports after the recess. So we'll do attendance before we go. President Larson is not here. Vice President Batnagar.
Present.
President Brown is not here. Vice President Ritka.
Yeah.
President Bourgeois.
Present.
Keep it down, please, so I'm done attendance. Shh. I'll put my classroom. Councilor Lynn.
Yep.
Councilor Kobus is not here. Councilor Anderson.
Here.
Councilor Riggs.
Here.
Did I miss you in the first one, Councilor Riggs? Were you outside?
I said here, but it was delayed.
Councilor Mawale.
Here.
Councilor Hassini is the live stream. Councilor Bilak.
Here.
Councilor Cutar. Councilor Lee.
Here.
Councilor Hussein.
Yes.
Councilor Stapp.
Here.
Councilor Ferris.
Here.
Councilor Thibodeau is here in the live stream. Councilor Ansari is in the live stream. Councilor Yao.
Here.
Councilor Rosalind.
Here.
Councilor Bose.
Here.
Councilor Ogwan.
Here.
Councilor Chung. Councilor Ahmad.
Here.
Councilor Sunday is here on the screen. Councilor Deanne. Councilor Palmer. Councilor Palmer. Councilor Azuki is on the live stream. Councilor Hadouche.
Yeah.
Councilor Kim.
Here.
Councilor Pinto.
Here.
Councilor Agarwal. He's on the live stream. Councilor Rizvi is also on the live stream. Councilor Bruce. And Councilor Belfort.
Here.
The cell phone manager is here. Turn 15.
Oh, yeah,
it's
a button.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go to Vice President Batnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So as we saw in many consultation processes and through an annual general meeting of the landing, although students voted on a referendum for the landing to exist, students have told us that the circumstances have changed, and specifically LGBTQS2S+ students have outlined that they want this to happen. So as council, it is our responsibility to represent those students who do not have a voice here today. And so we should be voting yes for this motion to occur. We are waiting way too long for this to happen. We may as well just make a decision based on the information provided. So I do urge all of council to vote yes for this motion, because it is what is right. And maybe not what's easy, but it's definitely what's right.
I'd like to respectfully disagree with Councillor Flamin. I think he has a really good point. I think he has a really good point. Students created the landing. Sorry?
Governor.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Mea culpa.
You've been around so long.
I've been too long. His point is well taken, but I think he said students created the landing, they should be the ones to take it away. If we do not do this, students don't take it away, it just goes away. And I think that has to be kept in mind as well. So we're making the smallest change we can to what the BFU stated. Our lawyers have said that this is kosher. And it's a way to keep these vital services kind of going. And as soon as it's practicable, we should be going back to students.
Thank you very much. Yes. Vice President Batnagar.
I'd like to call this a question.
We still have a few people who'd like to speak, and I think there is some debate to be had on this.
Isn't this a
call the question. We'll do that. I'll let it happen. All in favor of the call to question? Actually, is there a second? First, is there a second? Councilor Hiddush. All in favor of calling the question?
We need 2/3 majority.
All opposed? Favor, 2 opposed. Call the question carries. I am. Voting is now open. Close in 3, 2, 1. With 22 in favor, 0 opposed, and 1 abstention.
Yes!
All right, let's move to all our items this evening. Before we go, we have 5 minutes. Councilor Palmer asked last meeting, we ran out of time, if you'd like to give a poem in the spirit of Remember Stay, which happened earlier this month.
Thank you. So I was in a cultural memory and social justice class, and I wrote a poem in November 2017 that followed patterns that were outlined in my poetry class. It's a compilation of lines that are grouped together and arranged in order to form a new and unique poem in itself. Most of the lines that I used out of these poems were out of a book of poems that I came across in my travels. It's from the 1920s and were largely the immediate work of traumatized soldiers that returned from the World War I. As part of their healing journeys, captured part of their experiences in this form. The inheritances of difficult knowledges of violent and traumatic past, the intergenerational traumas and post-memory transcending through technologies of memory. And although the recounting of events through these technologies I found to be very fragmented and difficult to grasp and nearly impossible to reassemble, it gave me pause to consider how the very embodied effects were so inarticulable in words and through the work of these soldiers who found a form and medium in which to express. It's in the deeper silences or the unspoken and difficult parts of their testimonies, of those cryptically spoken, which gives a sense of the difficulties that were embodied within them that they were testifying to witnessing. In examining multiple perspectives contained within this book, speaking to the horrors of war and the post-memory, I used the famous Flanders Fields and weaved it through the symphony of voices of nearly 40 soldiers. The Flanders Fields poem seemed appropriate to use as it's largely recognized to depict traumas of war and the way in which Canadians remember their soldiers to be part of the world wars. Through reworking the poems and a new coding sequencing, and by way of incorporating the timeless piece of Flanders Fields that's recited yearly in the November 11th Remembrance Day ceremonies to our nation, it's my own unique way of acknowledging the difficult past and bringing the past into the future in a relevant and unique way that reinforces our regard for our country shaped a century ago. I gained a new perspective of the object relating to my course content and was able to appreciate that the compilation of quotes were a contribution to Canadian culture that had a larger social impact and testimony in how we have come to mark grief and interpret the world today. With the marking of Vinnie and World War events through technologies of memory meeting testimonies, the knowledge and awareness of this body of post-memory and remembrance work drew a connection between all of these authors' accounts of truth as a driving narrative, uncontested, although somewhat complicated by the state, reinforcing the past and present light. Over the course of time and in our contemporary moment, this experience of reading some of this testimony was deeply personal and directly affecting, connecting to the past and tracing my own ancestry to this time, the multiple men and women who fought, and then I missed that part. In reading each of the short 40 pieces in which the events of war were somewhat encrypted and fragmented and intersectional in nature, both indirect and through linear language of the poetry gave me a different perspective of this event through multiple and direct firsthand testimonies of survivors, voices of soldiers. Also, in the addition of my own artistic license in arranging different lines I felt were significant, this allowed for new meanings to emerge and to be integrated into our contemporary moment. I've submitted this work and it's been published as paying homage to remembering the significant historical and violent events of the past in which we re-examine, reinforce, and daily mark yearly as a secondary witness and a descendant. In Flanders Fields, angels that soar above enjoy such liberty. My spirit flew in feathers then. We shall not sleep, though poppies grow. While birds are flying south, in Flanders Fields where poppies blow. And all the world with ominous silence stood in weird expectancy, and as steady as the wind. How deep the swoons are given by praise, and in the dust are equal made. Between the crosses row and row, as heaven and nature seem to strive, and her goose fitting. The sunset may breathe from the lit sea beneath, which only the angels hear. Its ardor of rest and love that mark our place and in the skies. Godspeed, cried the watch as the gates bolt underneath. All the little boys and girls, with threatening tunes and low, move to quiet tears, and it starts eternally. The larks still bravely singing fly. The winter day broke blue and bright. Set about our hopeless search, we seemed to stand in endless while. Still no words were said. Scarce heard amid the guns below, their starry vigil kept. Your guess that truth will hold. The slender moon appears. We are the dead short days ago. Fearful of earth and sky, gone with the childlike dreams that touched us so. A silver shell and a shaken star, we lived, fell down, saw sunset glow. My soul doth magnify the Lord. Then I should render for my part a thankful heart. Angels alone that soar above enjoy such liberty. Love and we're loved and now we lie. The song and dance by nature taught, I remember. And his cohorts were gleaming with purple and gold. The half-formed speech of artless thought. In Flanders Fields, so runs my dream, but what am I? I was no surer of sunrise, marching along 50 score strong. Great-hearted gentlemen singing this song. Take up our quarrel with the foe. Silence and sleep like fields. I have heard the songs of blossoms and the old chant of the sea. All night long they danced in the rain. I knew it had come for me. The wings of it quivered, I shivered. To you from falling hands we throw. My rest is in my heart, in this kingdom by the sea. One vanished, the other died. They sought God side by side. As he sang upon a tree, the torch be yours, hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die. Suddenly, as swift as a flame, a host of dads and children came. Father, we are yours who come before you, judge. We shall not sleep though poppies grow. There dwells a loved one in Flanders Field.
Than that, so meeting adjourned 9:32.